TalkZone.com.
What happens when you put a bear with an attorney? You get Barely Legal. In the next hour, former Chicago Bear and 9-year pro football player Robin Earl and co-host attorney David Spada will tackle sports, interview current and former professional athletes, and discuss legal issues in sports. And they promise the next hour will be as exciting as a game-winning touchdown, a walk-off home run, or a buzzer-beating shot. And now, Barely Legal.
We're back, better than ever. This is David Spada here. My normal co-host, Robin Earl, is not here today. He's flying the friendly skies, coming back from Seattle, but I got someone filling in. My good friend, a Chicago teacher, a coach, Chuck Feeney. How you doing today, Chuck?
Doing well, David. How are you?
Good. The last show before us, Lawyers Who Needs Them, I wonder if they got Warner Brothers permission to use that Porky Pig soundbite.
We might have to get into that, but they not right now.
They should know better. And I didn't know Smokey the Bear was still around. I thought they got rid of him. I thought they brought someone else on board.
Well, Smokey the Bear, I think, helped find those two ex-cons in Arizona.
Which ex-cons were those?
The ones that...
They're not former baseball players, are they?
No former baseballs that are ex-cons. That's coming up, though. Roger Clemens will be doing some time, I'm guessing.
He should. I mean, why did he testify during those hearings? He should have just took the fifth and kept his mouth shut, especially after what happened with Barry Bonds.
I misremembered. I don't know. I don't know if nothing. He must have misremembered.
Misremembered? Is that a word? Aren't you an English teacher? Misremembered.
No, I don't teach English. No.
You sound like Mike North the way you're talking today.
He misremembered.
Misremembered.
It's bottom line.
Kind of like Blagojevich taking the fifth?
You have to be on the stand first.
What about... You called me last week when I was in Anaheim at Disney World and said, I got news for you. I said, I already saw Blagojevich's jury came out with their verdict. You said, no, more news. I said, okay, Mike North got a new show. He goes, no, more news. Derek Lee is getting traded. I said, you got to be kidding me. He finally agreed to get traded?
It was a good trade. I think it was a real good move for him. He got to come home and get the ovation.
It changed all of a sudden. He didn't want to go to play in Anaheim because he wants to be with his family. His kid's sick, and all of a sudden Atlanta wants him, and then he wants to go to Atlanta.
Yeah, there's a difference between 9.5 games almost there, right? Went from the first place chance with the Braves to Anaheim 9 out, I believe, at that time. Plus,
so it's not about the kid. It's about winning.
I think it's about winning. Another chance for a ring. Seems to be well accepted on that team right now in terms of, maybe he'll show some leadership.
He never showed any with the Cubs here. We had no leaders.
Right. That's exactly. You're going to get me into that. I don't.
Okay, you're going to drag me into this Blago thing here. I know you want me to comment on this.
I do.
The government is nuts if they retry this guy.
I really believe that it's just a really waste of money. I mean,
they won't sentence him on the one count he's found guilty on. He could get from 1 year to 5 years. They're not going to sentence him. They're going to wait to the new trial, retry him, waste millions of dollars of taxpayers' money. You have to pay for Blagojevich's new attorneys because Sam Adams is going to go back to selling beer and he's not going to be representing
him.
So, I mean, it's crazy. Just let it go. Obama should step in and say, just let it go.
Enough's enough.
Enough's enough. I don't want to have to testify. We don't want Rahm Emanuel. Let's let this thing go and be done with it. But again, this is just a waste of money. Again, the jurors could not agree that he was guilty on anything. And the ones that are all speculation that the money could have went for this, that's where they came the closest to convicting him. But even on that, they couldn't agree.
The best advice I would say Sam Adams, Sr. and Jr. both gave the Blagojevich's and Blagojevich's brother as well, is that, you know, to soil that jury pool as much as possible and to get that out there, as much as people think he's a clown, and he is a clown, but... You know, how does he get a fair trial?
Now? Okay, that's enough legal and Barely Legal. Let's get to the sports part of it. On the line now, we have former Chicago White Sox and San Diego Padre, 1983 Cy Young winner, and the guy who carried that 83 team, Lamar Hoyt. How you doing, Lamar?
Doing great. How you doing?
Good. What do you think about this year's Sox? Have you been watching any of the games so far?
Yeah, I've been keeping up with them this season. Seems like they had a pretty good stretch run there for a while, but when you go on a nice win streak like they did, you're going to have a little lapse after that. It's kind of hard to keep up that intensity for a long period of time, but I especially expect them to come back full throttle. I don't think they've done yet with the American League Central race.
They went up
against the Tigers and the Twins and didn't have a very good series, I see, but that's about it. But before that, they were rolling.
They're following the recipe for success. Back in 83, it worked. In the early 90s, it worked with the White Sox. You assemble a strong pitching staff, and pitching and defense wins games. And that staff, I mean, I know PV went down, but you got Burley. You have Gavin Floyd, you have John Danks, and now you have Edwin Jackson, and then you have Freddie Garcia. They just have a solid rotation back like you did in 1983 with you and Dotson and Bannister and Burns. I mean, in Kuzma, you guys were just solid.
I know. That's the thing, and we all kind of fed off each other and each other's emotions. We got along great on the field and off the field, and following the White Sox and knowing Ozzie the way I do, you know, he's going to keep the guys motivated. He's a great manager. They got all the tools to go all the way again. It's just a matter of putting it together on a short series once they get to the postseason, if they can get there.
What are you doing right now, Lamar? What keeps you busy on these days down in South Carolina?
Well, what I do basically is I work over at the little company called Dick Sporting Goods. I work in the golf department. And in my spare time, I spend a lot of time with my son's little AAU team. They travel around the state playing all over the place. And
are they pitchers to be?
Well, the little one is a shortstop, and he's pretty quick. He's got a good arm. He throws the ball really hard. I really am not crazy about him pitching at this particular year. In a year or two, yeah, if he wants to, that'll be fine once his muscles all get matured.
You mentioned that you don't want him to pitch. You're not crazy about it right now. You look at Steven Strasburg. They've babied this guy his whole life. He comes up, pitches maybe seven games in the major leagues, and he's already got arm problems. Is this because they basically babied him and he didn't develop his arm enough, or is it he was basically not – he didn't exercise right or stretch right or he overstretched? What do you think the problem is with him?
Well, when a guy throws that hard, you got to realize that the arm speed is what's generating that. The only problem I can see with him – is it having come out of college, it's quite a bit different. Like when I came up through baseball, you know, professionally, you got into a regime of throwing a lot right away. So, I mean, I was throwing over 200 innings when I was 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 years old, and just kind of built up a physical endurance over that time to be able to handle a large amount of pitches that you're required to throw. When you throw that hard, and you have that much arm speed, you're going to put strain, serious strain, unless you're mechanically perfect on some parts of your body. And the hard thing for myself, I know when I injured my right shoulder and pulled my rotator cuff to end my career, I really didn't know at the time when it happened whether it was just an aching muscle or I'd actually hurt something. And unfortunately, I followed some bad advice from San Diego Padres doctors and took some cortisone injections that I shouldn't have and basically should have just shut down and rehabilitated the thing right when I did it.
Because back in the day when I was playing Little League Baseball, the thing was until you were about a teenager, don't throw any basically breaking balls, just fastball curveballs, and just build up your arm strength. And that was the recipe for success here and not hurting your arm. Now they're throwing these curveballs, breaking balls at a young age, even though they're pitching less innings. I think that's doing more damage.
Yeah, it does, because what you do is you put the strain on your arm, and it's just like dealing with these kids on an everyday basis that I deal with. They're 13 years old, and they're all at different growth spurts. And the thing you have to do is remind yourself that they are children, and they have to let the muscles fully develop. What I try to teach these kids how to do is instead of throwing these crazy break balls, curve balls, and whatever, is I could make the ball. Basically, I was one of the first ones, I guess, who threw a cut fastball. Never knew anybody else could throw one until I got traded to San Diego. I was playing catch with Dave Jurecki one day, and he threw one back at me. I threw one back at him, and we were kind of laughing like, oh, how many other people know about this pitch? And, you know, there comes Mariano Rivera and knows what he does with it. But I understand that he learned how to throw it, throwing seashells down by the shore. So, anyway, there, you know, if you throw a baseball long enough, you understand how to, you know, aerodynamics work and the spin that you put on the ball and really don't have to do all this crazy inside-out stuff with your arm to throw a breaking ball. You just need to move it around, change your finger pressure a little bit. It's no big deal, really. But just being taught the proper way, that's why I'm out there with these kids, is to make sure that they learn the right way off the bat and that take care of that right arm or left arm in whatever case it may be, because you only got one. Once it's done, you're done. So that's my thing, is just make sure they do what's physically best for them and always remember to push off the rubber. Use your feet, your legs, your back, and your butt.
Lamar, when you were playing, who was the toughest hitter you ever faced?
Robin Yount, without a doubt. A lot of people have asked me that question over the years. Being a right-handed pitcher, him being a right-handed hitter, he was a particularly tough out. You couldn't throw him a ball and have him swing at it. And Wade Boggs had just as good an eye, but Robin was a lot more dangerous, and he was a right-handed hitter. So I felt like, you know, Wade had an advantage being a left-handed hitter. But those are probably the two toughest outs that I ever had in my career. But Robin, I don't know, he's a definite Hall of Famer, no doubt about it. The guy could go deep right field, left field. I mean, just kind of, you know, you got behind him in the count. He was one of those guys you had to make sure you stayed ahead of in the count, but to get ahead of the count, you had to throw him a strike. With him, it was kind of like you'd throw off-speed pitches, move the ball around, and kind of hope for that, 70% of the time they screw up works for you.
Exactly. His teammate, Paul Molitor, was another great hitter, Hall of Famer. I don't understand how him or Robin Yount haven't become major league managers up until this time.
I don't either. And the thing that gets me is that if you look at the success of, like, Ozzie, Tony La Russa, for that matter, because he was a shortstop when he came up. These guys that go out there and run the team on the field are the best suited ones to be managers, as far as I'm concerned, besides good catchers. Good pitchers, kind of flaky, but, you know, I'm speaking on experience myself, so. But anyway, I think it's much better if you've got a director. I mean, just like with Ozzie, he right away, you know, transitioned into the managerial spot because basically he's been running, you know, the defense out there for whoever he was playing with for years. So.
What do you think about the Cubs? They're talking about Ryan Sandberg possibly being the manager. But, I mean, you got Bob Brenly, former catcher in the booth who's interested in the job, and the guy pushing for former Chicago Cub, Joe Girardi, because, again, he's a catcher. He's got the intensity. I just see Sandberg as being too laid back.
Well, I don't know. I think there again, I played against Ryan. He was in the National League most of my career, but I did get the opportunity to face him once. I was with the Padres, and he also hit me pretty good. But, like I say, those middle infielders, when they're out there, they're all involved in every pitch, every part of the game. They know the game inside out. And, you know, that's the thing. I think that he may be a little laid back, but the guy's got a heck of a long history of knowledgeable baseball experience. And, you know, with him, you're going to get a good qualified person. I saw the article earlier. I've seen him on TV being interviewed about, you know, him being the manager of the Des Moines Club, which I had played on earlier in my career. But anyway, I thought that when Lou retired the other day that they'd probably go ahead and make him the manager, but I guess they'll probably wait till next year to do that.
I don't think they're going to do it because, again, I agree with you. If they're going to make him the manager, he's getting a free ride the rest of the year, get some experience, put him in there now. I mean, I know they're in the playoffs, AAA playoffs in Iowa, but, okay, let him finish the playoffs and then put him in there. But, again, they're not doing it. From what I'm hearing is they're going to go after Girardi hard, and if he turns him down, then they're going to look to Sandberg, which I'm like, why don't you make your decision now?
Well, you're going to have to deal with Steinbrenner big bucks. And I don't think him coming back to the Cubs would be as attractive as managing the New York Yankees. So, you know, that's the premier job in baseball, and that's the one everybody wants. So, you know, it's going to be hard to get him out of that spot while he's there and while they're winning. So.
I just wanted to.
They want to pay him $10 million a year.
Endorse Sandberg a little bit also. I mean, heck, they got 10 guys up here right now that were on this Iowa team, and they're still in first place. And I'm sure they've moved up guys from Double A, and that's just the pecking order. But I don't understand it, like David said, and like you've said, Lamar, what they're waiting for. If they're, I mean, obviously to see who's available, number one. But number two, these are his players. He's coached them actually at Peoria. And I don't know if he did do a Double A stint, did he, David?
He did a couple years in Double A.
So, I mean, he has a very deep knowledge of the farm system. Some would say more than the GM, but that's just my opinion.
Well, he would be the perfect guy to plug in my history as far as my experience is concerned, because when you're familiar, I know when I first got to the major leagues, one thing that I had going for me was I'd played 3 straight years of winter ball. So I'd played in Dominican, Venezuela, and then Puerto Rico. And over here in the summer. So I played continually for 3 straight seasons, which gave me the opportunity to see a lot of these Latin ball players that I had never seen over here. And then when I got to the major leagues, I had seen these guys before in different winter leagues here or there or wherever earlier in their careers. But once you have knowledge of something, knowledge is is an important tool. And that's what I'll say. You know, Ryan has the knowledge, and he has knowledge of that farm system, and that's the most important factor, is he probably knows there's a couple of people out there who are definitely talented enough to get the opportunity. And if he gets in the right position where he can get the right people in Chicago, I think he's the best guy for it. He's most familiar with their minor league system and all the players in it. So.
Exactly. I'll tell you what the hardest job I think in Chicago is being the owner of the White Sox, because you have to deal with Kenny Williams' personality and Ozzie Guillen's, and that's not easy.
No, that's not easy. They're two radically different people, but, you know, I like Ozzie a lot. I love Jerry Reinsdorf. He's a great owner. You couldn't ask for a better owner of an organization. Kenny Williams, you know, he does his own little thing, and you know, that's fine. He seems to make moves when he has to, but he doesn't, you know, tip his hand to what he's trying to do, which when they come up and do something, it's kind of a surprise move. I was kind of shocked this morning when I was watching, or yesterday, one, when they were talking about signing Manny as a, you know, free agent. But, you know, I think that would be a great acquisition for them. If, you know, they want to pay the bucks to him to bring him out there. Every time he's changed teams, he's been hot right off the bat and carried him, so. They acquired him. I imagine that would be the block to get him over, or the one to get him over the hump, because he's going to come over to the American League. He's going to be back at home. So they played in Cleveland. He played in Boston. He's been in the National League. He come back to the American League. The pitching in the American League, I'll tell you right now, is a lot tougher than in the National League.
Why is it? I mean, the pitchers bump around from the National American. Why is there such a big discrepancy still, or disparity?
Well,
still?
I tell you, you know, I really, you know, I know Roger Clemens is, you know, not a good topic right now, but, you know, he's a prime example. I mean, he spent most of his career in American League. And I'll tell you what, to put together as many wins as he did, to do what he did in American League, is just speaks volumes as far as his ability as a pitcher. I don't know how much of the steroid stuff is true or not or whatever. Who cares? I don't. But, you know, doing it in the National League and winning games, to me, when I came from the American League, went to the National League, you realize you got two outs at the end of the order. You got a shortstop usually, or a second baseman that can't hit, followed by the pitcher. When you put two automatic outs in the middle of the lineup, in the middle of the game, to me, that's just making it easier for the pitcher. You know, I remember talking to Dick Williams when I first got there, and yeah, you know, I'd thrown like 8 or 9 straight complete games, 10 complete games at one time, and pitching a game in San Diego, or, you know, St. Louis, and I'd gone 8 innings on a real hot night right before the All-Star game. And he looked at me and he says, "Aren't you a little worn out? You know, you've thrown 9 straight complete games, because Goose would like to get into one of your games. He's been called up here 3 times." And I said, yeah. Because I'd kind of forgot we even had Goose down the bullpen. I still had the mindset I was in Chicago. We just had those thrown-in relievers back there, Salome Barojas, those guys.
Yeah, Ed Farmer was already gone by that time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that is
so
a nice
didn't really. I didn't trust the bullpen. That's why I wanted to go 9 every time I went out there. So.
You didn't have to trust the bullpen when you had Bannister and you and Dotson. You guys were, and Burns, you guys were just solid.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, we had a good mix. We had a good communication between us all. Just like me and Richard kind of fed off each other. He would throw change-ups where I would throw breaking balls or off-speed pitches, but we knew what guys, I mean, he would see the team first in the series and let me know who's looking for what or whatever. I'd do the same thing for him if I saw him first. It's just like we take our little steps of success and, you know, we'll walk right on up the ladder. It's just a shame at the end of the year what happened, because I didn't think that either him or Floyd would lose back-to-back.
I'll tell you what, I know Doug Rader coined the term winning ugly, but I think the reason he did it was because those uniforms were ugly back in 1983.
They weren't only ugly. I hate to say this, but White Sox are a first-class organization. They do have first-class uniforms now, but those uniforms were horrible. They were horrible to wear. They were basically a softball uniform. They were made by the Sandknit Company. And I tell you what, when you put one on, I mean, I know I was heavy, but it just made you look that much heavier. I didn't need that myself.
What about Greg Luzinski? How did he put those?
I know, it made
the
him
ball
like a small refrigerator.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, you had some characters on that team. You had Luzinski, Kittle, Fisk. Yeah, it'd be interesting in the clubhouse.
Fun. the biggest one that everybody overlooked, and I don't know, I got in a lot of trouble in 84 for making the statement, but when they let Dennis Lamp go, that took all the character out of the clubhouse. That guy was a total clown. I mean, he would mimic you. He would imitate you. He would just have us in the clubhouse rolling all over the place. I swear to God, could have been a comedian. Then when I saw him in 2003 when we had our 20-year reunion in Chicago, he was still the same. But I think he was working in a department store or something.
You're kidding. Because he was your closer back in 83 with Barojas, right?
Yeah, well, and he was a long reliever, put it like that. He was the guy we brought in. We wanted somebody out. He was the guy we brought in. And then for him to sign in 84 to go to the Blue Jays and go 11-0, I just was like, oh, my gosh. I mean, you take the character out of a clubhouse. I don't know. You know, they make business decisions all the time, just like when they traded me. But, you know, I just didn't make a lot of sense to me when they added Tom Seaver in 84 when we already had the best starting staff in baseball.
No, that doesn't make sense at all. You're right.
Yeah, sign him and they let Dennis Lamp go, which was, you know, meant a lot more in the clubhouse. Tom's locker was right next to me in 84, and I got to talk to him an awful lot. I learned a lot from him. But, still, when you take a character like Dennis out of the clubhouse, a lot of times guys will stay around a while because they are good for the team and they're good in the clubhouse. You know, they kind of get everybody going together, and you know, that's really an intangible that you can't replace.
Some say this 2010 White Sox team doesn't have enough of that, let's say, character in the clubhouse, not character off the field, but characters that, you know, keep everybody loose, you know, and some to say that, you got Ozzy and Kenny feuding up here right now in terms of he said, and all this stuff on Twitter and this and that, and we don't want to get into that, but in terms of those guys are irreplaceable just to keep everybody loose. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. That's exactly what they need, but, you know, they've tried to do the best they can. I mean, you can't actually get in there and get inside the player's head, but you can try. And, you know, a lot of times I know Ozzy, you know, he'll do something, he'll say something just to get everybody motivated. I mean, I can tell just being an ex-player that, you know, it's the managers are the ones that get everybody going. And if he feels like he needs to do whatever, he's going to do it. He's not afraid. And that's why I like him as a manager. I wouldn't mind playing for Ozzy at all. I mean,
Pachoric was quite a character also, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, he was great. I mean, Tommy, you know, he was another one. We had different guys that would just break down all of a sudden. Everybody'd sit around, and then they'd just start going through their routine. And, you know, everybody had a little something going. He still does it at those fantasy camps, from what I understand. I've been to a couple of those. Anyway, yeah, Tom was quite a character, too. He was great in clubhouse as well.
I hear Kittle's crazy at those fantasy camps.
Yeah, he can get a little crazy. He's always been that way. He's just a big teddy bear as far as I'm concerned. And I remember when we first signed that guy, and I was in Appleton, Wisconsin with the A-ball team when they signed him and as a walk-on, but he comes out there and he's telling me he's hitting balls in the upper deck of Comiskey Park. Well, I'd never been in Comiskey Park, so I didn't have any idea what he was talking about. But when he starts hitting them over the light poles over the parking lot left field, I said, kid might have something. And then he goes on to bomb his way up to Major League and Rookie of the Year and great career from there on, but you know, Ronnie's just a good guy. I mean, all around good guy.
He's got a great temperament. The only way you get him upset is if you tell him he was a bad fielder. Then he'd get in your face.
Yeah, he would. I know I had a game one particular day, and I think it was May. I was pitching against a Yankee. I had a perfect game going. He was playing left field. They had a fly ball. Don Mattingly hit a little ball off the end of his bat that he broke back to the wall on. And when he came back in, Jerry Zinsky was playing shortstop, dove out to try to catch it, and the ball landed kind of like Ron had just left. And, they gave him a hit on it. Next guy up, I think, was Steve Kemp. He had a one-hopper back to me. I turned double play, but I ended up facing only 27 guys in a game. But I kind of let him know every once in a while when I see him, I appreciate you hitting all those home runs, but if you just made that one catch.
What would you have done if you were Galarraga from the Tigers and that umpire cost you a no-hitter on the last play of the game? Would you have gotten that umpire's face? I know I would have.
I don't know, because I've got a different perspective than a lot of people. I sat there, I watched that play over and over. And the one thing that gets me is I don't think people are paying attention to the ball in his glove, because what he did was the ball hit his glove and it kind of bounced out and he re-snagged the ball. The initial throw did beat the runner to the plate, but he didn't have possession of the ball when the guy crossed the base. He had possession of the ball once the guy was past the base. But the umpire apologized, and I'm sorry, I think the umpire made the right call. But that's why I say, no, I wouldn't have been in the state. Because if I bobble the ball at first and the guy runs by, I've got nothing to say because I didn't have possession of the ball. And I saw on replay after replay after replay, if the ball hit in his glove, and if you watch it again, the ball kind of looks like it's going to bounce out of his glove, and he kind of re-snags it.
You are the first person to bring that up. Everybody has brought up the opposite point that he was out. It's clear if you look at the replays. But, again, no one except you has brought up that ball hit his glove, kind of popped out, and he re-snagged it. I mean, that is what you get from a former player who actually knows the game and watches it versus some of these experts.
That's what gets me. So I watch baseball a little bit different than everybody else I've noticed over the years. I don't know why. But anyway, I kind of watch what the pitchers are doing, and it's just like coaching these kids now. It's just like when a guy gets up there and he starts showing me a tendency to do something, guys start grinding the ball in their gloves. I tell them, hey, guys, you know, you don't have to look for a fastball if that guy's grinding the ball, you know, his hand into his glove, because here comes a breaking ball. May as well expect it. You're not trying to grip a fastball like that. If they just nod up, wind up, throw the ball, you can throw on a fastball, because it's probably what you're going to get.
Thank you very much, Lamar, for coming on with us. You have provided so much insight, stuff I don't even know. I really enjoyed it. Thank you again.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Lamar. Enjoy the boys and enjoy your golf down there in South Carolina.
All righty. Y'all have a good day.
Take care now.
When we come back, we will have on Darrell Evans, former major leaguer with the Tigers, the Braves, the Giants. He's been all over the place.
If you're injured at work, don't try to be a hero and work in pain. Immediately tell your boss how you were injured and seek medical treatment. Then call my guy, attorney David Spada, to make sure that your rights are protected. David will fight for the payment of your medical bills, loss, wages, and settlement. Insurance companies and employers have individuals representing their interests. Why not you? You must have an experienced attorney on your side. All fees are contingent upon your recovery. Call David Spada at 847-729-COMP. That's 847-729-2667.
When you hear a police siren, what's your first thought? Well, it should be to call our guy, attorney David Spada. Going to court without David is a huge mistake and may result in a conviction, loss or suspension of your license, traffic school, increased insurance rates, or even jail. Brian, what should scoreheads do?
Not screw up. They should call our guy, David Spada. Call David at 847-729-COMP. That's 847-729-2667. David Spada, our guy, a score guy, and an attorney you can count on.
Anyone can create a podcast on the web. In fact, there are millions of them online. But if you want quality internet talk radio, just remember this address, TalkZone.com. TalkZone is internet talk radio for planet Earth with talented hosts, great guests, and good conversation. Ready to share your thoughts and ideas with a global audience? Become a TalkZone show host yourself. Learn more at TalkZone.com. Internet talk radio for planet Earth.
TalkZone.com.